The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday, Tuesday, casual Tuesday, Wednesday, casual hump day, Thursday, casual Thurs, that's what we call it, and Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It's Friday, August 23rd, 2019. I'm Michael Brooks on a Michael Casual Friday. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We're broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On today's program, Ben Mankiewicz. He's a host from Turner Classic Movies and The Young Turks. He's going to give us a movie pick, and we're also going to talk about the newly minted king of our people, Donald Trump. And just old Hollywood. I miss talking to Ben. Glad to have Ben back on the show. And then, oh my God.
Say, baby, put down that pipe and get my pipe up.
Ben, Matt Pinter's back. Sorry. That was very immature, folks. It's Casual Friday. The great Matt Binder has returned. He's the host of Doomed, a podcast about trolls, the far right. So we're going to talk a little bit about actually this really wild and disturbing report that the Southern Poverty Law Center revealed about a State Department bureaucrat who was an underground propagandist for a white ethnostate. We're going to talk about that and get to some other things as well, play some videos together, have some old school Eminem energy, although we will actually be in the same shot. No split screen. In other news that people might enjoy, trying to think. David Koch has died. The billionaire conservative far-right activist has passed away. Angela Merkel backs Macron's calls for a G7 talk on the Amazon fires, even as clown fascist J.R. Bolsonaro proves the ultimate futility of pseudo-woke discourse. He called Emmanuel Macron's criticisms of the Amazon fire colonialist. Okay. Kashmir continues to be in lockdown as there are calls for protests, and a prominent Indian politician brags about the BJP's fake news and propaganda capabilities. U.S. officials confirm an Israeli air raid in Iraq. House Democrats, they might be failing to get Trump's tax returns. The hedge fund cash flows to presidential candidates at Puerto Rico's expense. As you can imagine, those candidates include Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, Beto O'Rourke, and Pete Buttigieg. Not good people. Justice Department sent immigration judges a white nationalist blog post with anti-Semitic attacks. And we will get to that and much, much more on today's Majority Report. How's everybody doing? Bernie Sanders put out in the last 3 days. So now, in addition to single-payer health care, a complete student loan cancellation, the centering of the fulfillment of broad-based economic rights for all, significant interventions in foreign policy in terms of Yemen, Iran, war, broader, the only person with any kind of courage and clarity on Israel and the Middle East, calling for freeing political prisoner Lula, which has a direct relationship to the Amazon crisis today. Bernie has put out a group of packages in the last several days, criminal justice reform, labor rights, and the Green New Deal, of which even a fraction of which were implemented would completely reshape American society in an radically positive, radically transformative direction. Now's the time to start talking a bit about plans, because a movement has been enacted in the context of the campaign to actually take up all of the endless interests that will fight against all of these transformations, all of the corporate oligarchs that run this country. And part of the group of dangerous oligarchs that run this country are, of course, fossil fuel companies, people whose whole business structure and living and massive wealth is based off of extracting a public good, a public commons, polluting it in the putting it in the air, polluting our global ecology in a way that threatens the survivability of the human race. And Bernie Sanders has a message for them.
It is no secret that we must transition away from fossil fuel, period, end of discussion. There ain't no middle grounds here. There is no middle ground.
There ain't no middle ground, just as there's no middle ground on a radical labor reform package that would improve the lives and offer secure jobs and benefit to tens of millions of people. An incredible criminal justice plan that would cut the criminal prison population by half. We went into detail yesterday, the range of things in this Green New Deal. This is the most thorough, innovative, and integrated policy proposal anybody's put on the map in modern politics. I can't stress how exciting and meaningful it is to see a candidate and a campaign put this forward. And I hope people will be, again, actually get serious about this campaign and get serious about the absolute unique potential of what Bernie Sanders and the campaign represents. Wanted to give an honorable mention. I don't know if we have it, but clip number four, just in the spirit of this as well, Jay Inslee. So as I said, I've definitely heard very mixed things about Jay Inslee's record as governor of Washington. And there's a lot to unpack here. One of the reasons that Bernie's plan is in a different league than all the others is because it absolutely is a labor, indigenous people's rights, completion of the New Deal in a way that also reverses the racist aspects of the New Deal. This is a justice package. It's a jobs package. It's a labor package. It's a recreation of power package, as well as taking on the radically ambitious agenda we need in order to make the human species survive from the ecological and climate crisis. So there's a lot to disaggregate. Somebody like Jerry Brown has done a lot on the innovation and renewability side and emissions target side as governor of California, and did very little to nothing on thing and was harmful on areas like fracking, and clearly did not have a strong vision of environmental justice. Sanders' plan, as an example, bans fracking and has deep commitments on environmental justice. So I don't know where Inslee fit in those dynamics, but I do know of a stage full of people that don't belong there and are wasting everybody's time. Delaney, Hickenlooper, Klobuchar, and even a bunch, frankly, of mid-tier candidates that are just, I mean, you know, Buttigieg, Harris, this is just nothing. And of course, we go to the top and Joe Biden, my God, and even some, you know, significant criticisms, frankly, of all the others besides Sanders. Jay Inslee was there. And I think actually I also have to say Bill de Blasio has used his position on that stage to make some strong arguments and highlight some important things. The fact that Inslee centered this set the stage for the radical expansion of what Sanders put on the table. And he was the only one of the Oselrans who provided really any value in these debates. So we want to honor him on his way out of the campaign, and glad he was there to center the climate crisis. And he also regularly talked about union jobs as well in that context.
But I understand that you are here tonight to make some news.
I am. Listen, this show has been so good to me. This is sort of the bookends of my campaign. We started saying that climate change had to be the number one job in the United States. I felt very good saying that the first days of my campaign. I feel very good saying that now. And the reason is this has just become more urgent. 1 billion tons of ice melted in Greenland the other day. But we also have had so many people I've met who are inspiring, who want us to act, who've helped me. We had 130,000 people help me in this campaign. But it's become clear that I'm not going to be carrying the ball. I'm not going to be the president, so I'm withdrawing tonight from the race. But I have to tell you, look, I've been fighting climate change for 25 years, and I've never been so confident of the ability of America now to reach critical mass to move the ball. I believe we are going to have a candidate to fight this battle.
Well, that's great. That candidate, you know, is obviously Bernie Sanders. I hope Inslee will be endorsing him soon, and I appreciate what Inslee brought to this race. He, at least as a candidate, he centered really important issues, and he had a certain sort of decency about him, which I thought was palpable. So yeah, I appreciated him there.
Nate Silver tried to suggest, I think it was Nate Silver, that, you know, his the lack of performance in the polls suggests that people aren't ideologically motivated but to pick their candidates, right? And I just think that's nonsense, because I think anybody who really cares about climate change is, frankly, I mean, I think they should be Bernie, but they're probably at least Warren, if that's their single issue, right? They probably know who they're really voting for. Right?
Yeah, the only people, right. I mean, you'd have an honorable mention for a guy who isn't on the map, and then you'd be looking at Sanders and possibly
somebody
Warren.
Who could win, obviously.
Right, yeah, it's not that complicated. I mean, look, Nate Silver, honestly, I mean, just what an embarrassment. Like, I get that he's got motivated reasoning. I get that he's a right-wing Democrat or whatever. But, like, dude, you can't just, like, especially if your brand is, you know, nerdy numbers guy, you can't just, like, constantly opinionate nonsense all day. It's weird.
Watch
it. I mean, like he literally does. He literally opinionates nonsense all day. And it's embarrassing and sad for all of us to watch. Today's show is brought to you by NetSuite by Oracle. The problem that keeps so many businesses from knowing their numbers is their hodgepodge of business systems. They have one system for accounting, another for sales, another for inventory, and so on. It's just a big, inefficient mess that takes up too much time and too many resources, and that hurts the bottom line. Definitely going to be doing some streamlining of TMBS systems, without a doubt. Even in a small thing, it really does if you don't have that type of stuff done efficiently. Introducing NetSuite by Oracle, the business management software that handles every aspect of your business in an easy-to-use cloud platform that gives you the visibility and control you need to grow. With NetSuite, you save time, money, and unneeded headaches by managing sales, finance, and accounting orders and HR instantly, right from your desktop or phone. That's why NetSuite is the world's number one cloud business system. And right now, NetSuite is offering you valuable insights with a free guide, 7 key strategies to grow your profits. You going to read this for Literary Hangover, Matt?
Oh, yes, definitely. Yes.
At netsuite.com/majority. That's netsuite.com/majority to download your free guide. 7 key strategies to grow your profits. netsuite.com/majority. What's that?
Accidentally pumped up the music a little bit too fast.
How's the do we have a water boat situation today, Matt?
No, definitely not.
Definitely not.
Gotta have an airplane situation later, though.
I've no doubt. I was actually on an airplane recently, and I was sitting and getting situated, and I was like leaning back, and I closed my eyes, and all of a sudden I smelled this incredible water boat aroma coming on the plane. And for a minute I was like, oh damn, is Matt on my same plane?
Very risky.
Well, not risking. Hey, it doesn't mean you were carrying water boat. It just means you were smelling water boat. I would never think you would be dumb enough to carry water boat. But to pre-water boat, I certainly believe that you would pre-water boat.
Yeah, well, that's believable.
That's, say, I would say highly plausible.
That's plausible.
I would say likely. Matt's giving me those. Mom could be listening. Shut your mouth, man. All right, we're going to take a brief break, and we'll be right back with Ben Mankiewicz.
Thank you.
welcome back to the Majority Report. Michael Brooks here. Joining us now is Ben Mankiewicz, who is the host of Turner Classic Movies. You can also see him on the Young Turks from time to time. Ben, how you doing, man?
I'm well. Nice to talk to you, Michael.
It's great to talk to you as always. Talk to us about, how long have you been doing Turner Classic Movies now?
16 years.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I made my debut in September of 2003. So we're right at Sweet 16.
So what's your selection process for what movies you want people to check out, what movies you want to talk about?
Well, I mean, I can highlight whatever, you know, I mean, like on stuff like this, I pick the movies that I think people will be interested in, but we got a programming department. Here's who doesn't get consulted on our programming, your friend Ben. but my closest friend at the channel's the head of programming, Charlie Davish. And so, you know, I've certainly developed enough of a reputation there for being involved in the, you know, so picking, select, helping to pick guest programmers, what's going to work for that. But the day-to-day programming, they're great at it. Probably the main reason the network is as successful as it is because they're so good at that. Picking, you know, framing each night, putting every single night has some little mini festival, some little mini connection. They're geniuses when it comes to programming old movies.
Do you think are you somebody who, as a guy in the movie business, are you somebody who's burned out on this whole superhero movie thing, or are you one of these, or is that like being a snob and they're actually great, blah blah blah? What do you think?
No, I'm not burned out. I've been cremated. I thought Iron Man was really good. Right.
Like the first one. Didn't that come out in like 2007 or something? Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think it's 2008. It might be 2007. I think it's 8, but I don't even know. And so I was going to say, it's been a minimum of 11 years since that movie came out. And even by, you know, the great Batman, whichever one that was, Batman, which I don't even know, but I can't even remember the title, Dark Knight, you know. Like, I was like, that's good, but I got it. Like, the Heath Ledger was fantastic, but I... Like, he was too brooding, Christian Bale. Like, I need movies that have a little, and I guess Ledger provided the, but I mean, I was largely done after that. Mm-hmm. I don't care about seeing invincible people punch each other into buildings. And I mean, that, you know, that is uninteresting and has no, now, but that said, I am not a snob about it because people I love, care about, and whose opinions I value enormously, they love this stuff.
You know, there's a lot of people that I love and care about, but I don't value their opinions. I mean, you can make a distinction.
Right, no. But I mean, about movies, I care about their opinions, right? You know, and so, you know, but it's not for me. I don't think it's really for grown-ups. I mean, the movies are targeted for grown-ups. I get it. Some of the kids who grew up with that. But look, man, I used to play, you know, Strat-O-Matic baseball, dice baseball, and I would create whole seasons. I'd replay entire seasons, mm-hmm. but I'd mix it up. I'd like combine two bad teams, make them a good team, move them to DC where there was no team or where I grew up, and then play a 90 game schedule. And then every day I'd write down the real major league scores so that those were their opponents and I'd have fake standings. I mean, that's dorky. And guess what? I would do it today if I had time. It was thrilling.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was Dungeons and Dragons for a baseball fan. So I get liking something, but my thing hasn't taken over every billboard and my thing hasn't pushed out grown up movies about adults.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where the resentment comes in. And everybody in this town out here talks about that, you know, movies either cost $1 million or $200 million. You know, there's nothing in the middle where, you know, you spend $40 million and you make 70 and people are happy because you made a little money.
What's
right?
The they economics need to make, of that?
They need to make $1 billion.
Is the story that I heard, and please correct me if I'm wrong, because I, the extent I know movies, I always wondered, why is it that in like the 70s, there were a bunch, like the quote unquote mainstream movies were not all of them, but they were great. A lot of them, you had the Godfather movies and Dog Day Afternoon and Apocalypse Now and Serpico. And those were just like the movies. and they happen to be just these like really great. And I one story I've heard is that, you know, the sort of Hollywood bosses were sort of just completely overtaken by the counterculture, and there was a new sort of economics there, and they kind of were willing to say, hey, maybe you guys should just have some freedom to explore here because we don't really know what the hell's going on. And then Jaws and Star Wars.
You're largely right.
Sorry, go ahead. Tell me about
it. You're, no,
yeah, go ahead.
You're right. You're right. That's a version of the correct of what's correct. They 1967 and 1976, greatest 10-year run American movies ever, because they turned these talented directors. This is the auteur theory here, that they let these directors make their movies and they got out of their way. And that's what left you with, starting with the 1967, this amazing year of Bonnie and Clyde and Cool Hand Luke and In the Heat of the Night and Guess Who's Coming to Dinner and The Graduate, all the way through, I think, 1976. I wouldn't include Jaws in the list of where things went wrong. That's still part of what things went right. That was Steven Spielberg making a great, great movie. It just made so much money over the summer, they were like, well, let's do this again. It really ends with Star Wars, like 77. That's the... And I'm not knocking Star Wars, but that's when the economics changed.
Right.
You know, 76 still had Rocky, All the President's Men, Network. You know, three unbelievable movies, vital movies for people to see, especially Network and All the President's Men for people who care about the media and politics. So that run where directors, Scorsese and Friedkin and Bogdanovich, Coppola, Hal Ashby, Norman Jewison, where these guys had the ability to go make their kind of movie, make it their way. Sidney Lumet, you mentioned, you know, Dog Day Afternoon, you know, Lumet at Network. Lumet is all over these movies. And then that went away as sort of corporate control took over. And it was happening, of course, throughout the 80s where,
right,
you know, look, I'm not an expert on this, but basically, to me, companies were like, well, we make a little money and our employees have a nice life and we have a nice life and that's good enough. And then as sort of conglomerates started owning stuff, and including movie studios, it became, no, we got to pay the shareholders. That right. matters more. The shareholders matter more than our employees. And, you know, the shareholders always mattered, but there was some balance, right? There was some... You didn't think you were going to get to be a gazillionaire because you were a major stockholder in some of these companies. You just thought, sort of, I'm protecting for if something goes wrong, I'm protecting for my retirement so I don't have to work until I'm 70. You know, the culture shifted in America, and it started, and then it began affecting movies. And some of these guys then went out and lost a lot of money on these movies, right? Like when the auteur theory doesn't work, you spend a lot of money and the movie's terrible.
Right.
But you're right. It gave us these, you know, in Coppola and 3 years makes The Godfather, The Conversation in between about electronic surveillance, which is another movie everybody should see, and then The Godfather 2. I mean, Godfather, it's unbelievable what that guy did.
That's
in a short
period of time. Incredible run.
You know, Mean Streets, Taxi Driver.
Yep.
Taxi Driver, by the way, also 76. 76 is All the President's Men, Rocky, Network, Taxi Driver. You know, that's an unbelievable.
That is an unbelievable stretch. Yeah, that's crazy. And yeah, was there like a little sort of, I don't know the history, obviously, but then there's an idea that in the 90s there was a little bit of an indie pushback, and some of that, like, I'll admit, I'm not a huge, I don't remember the guy's name even, but I was never into like Clerks and that and those movies. Just because to me, I just didn't find them particularly funny.
Kevin Smith. You're wrong about Clerks. It's brilliant, but I hear you. Go ahead.
You're wrong about Clerks. No, I'll rewatch Clerks. Hey, man, I probably watched Clerks through a haze of what Clerks was joking about, meaning marijuana.
Right, totally. Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know. But I think, but then, you know, I rewatched Pulp Fiction recently, and you know, it's definitely not as cool as I thought it was when I was a teenager, but it actually is still a very interesting, very funny, very bizarre and cool movie. So what was that sort of like, what was that little kind of opening there that happened in the 90s? And then what happened to that?
I don't know. I'm not an expert enough to tell you what that was about. You're right in recognizing that it happened. I mean, I think basically, you know, it was look, these are creative people. I mean, one reason I love living out here is because I think the most talented artists in the world are here, and you run into them in coffee shops, and when you play poker, you know, when you play softball, give you an idea what I imagine the perfect life is. Right. You got a softball game, you play poker, and you get coffee and you talk about sports, movies and politics and what else. That, then literally I could die at, you know, old. I'll take 92, die happy. You know, that was the focus of my life.
I've got some of my best experiences of actually starting to understand LA as a town has been sitting with a Ben Mankiewicz and maybe also a Michael Shore and just talking. It's great.
I mean, I'm from DC, but I love it out here. I've been out here 20 years now, and I defend it. I hate it when I get, you know, I'm like a New Yorker who, you know, like how you guys are, you know, about the city, and I just love it here. And I just
New York is terrible. It's being ruined by Russian oligarchs, and Michael Bloomberg destroyed every last vestige of it, and de Blasio can't save it because he's not left-wing enough. So, no, trash it all you want. There's plenty of people from Ohio who live here now, and they're terrible.
By the way, I spent last weekend in Columbus, Ohio, at the 25th anniversary of another movie from 1994, Mansfield, Ohio. But I stayed in Columbus. The 25th anniversary of Shawshank Redemption, another great 94 movie. Both Shawshank and Pulp Fiction, better than Forrest Gump, which won won Best Picture.
That's embarrassing.
And so Columbus, Ohio, great town. Great, great town. I had no idea. I'd never been there. I'm kind of in love with Columbus.
I believe it. And that's a great sort of, I think that should be a signal to the Ohioan transplants here to go back to what's great.
Go back to what's great.
I don't know why I'm picking on Ohio specifically. Well, I mean, I think it should be kind of obvious, but much love, particularly if you're a patron of TMBS from Ohio. Can we just take a second? I do want to talk about Trump for a minute before we get to the recommendations. But I don't know if we've ever talked about this on air. I think we've talked about it in person. I haven't seen the new Tarantino movie yet. I just don't. I don't even remember the last time I was in a theater. I want to see it at some point. But I really hope that people will all see Jackie Brown. Like, I think Jackie Brown, I rewatched that recently, and I am amazed by what a generous, amazing movie that is. Anyways, go ahead.
I have a great Jackie Brown story. So yes. I interviewed Tarantino for TYT, for the Young Turks, like, 2 years ago when he had the Hateful Eight out. And he wanted to come in, he wanted to see me. It was an honor, and I was sure that I was going to be a part of the extended Tarantino entourage. Like, the twice a year he had a party at his house, like I'd get an invite. Like, we weren't going to get a meal, but I was positive. Anyway, it's oddly, that didn't happen. But it was a very interesting conversation. And one of the questions that I asked him that I was determined to, I said, what do you say to a Tarantino fan whose favorite Tarantino movie is Jackie Brown? And he looked at me and he goes, well, I'd say that person's not really a Quentin Tarantino fan.
Well, I'm not really a Quentin Tarantino fan then, man, because that movie, I mean, I like his movies. He's fun, whatever. But Jackie Brown is fantastic. It's on a different order of magnitude.
I won't go back. I love a lot of his movies, and I think his movies are always fun, and I really only dislike one. And I didn't like the second Kill Bill movie. I love the first. The second one seemed like a bunch of sword fights. But Reservoir Dogs, Pulp Fiction, Inglourious Basterds, there's some movies I adore, including, I mean, I really like The Hateful Eight.
Oh, wow.
So
you are a Tarantino fan,
but Jackie,
man.
But Jackie Brown is my favorite Tarantino movie, and I think it's largely perfect, and I've seen it easily 10 times. And, all these great actors just deliver in these perfect performances because the script is so good. So I think he's wrong. And in my movie Twitter world, I mean, I have a political Twitter world and a movie Twitter world. Because of this new Tarantino movie, Jackie Brown was getting a lot of love. So it's not, no one thinks of it in first and foremost in his canon. I can't believe I said that. But it ought to be there. It's a great, great film from a great book. I mean, Elmore Leonard,
Rum Punch.
For the brief moments. If you're not looking to, there may be a moment in your life when you're not reading about the political and economic history of Panamanian migrant workers. if you have that moment in your life, you should read a bunch of Elmore letters.
So I actually did read Rum Punch. I read Rum Punch back in the day. And there's another...
That's where Jackie Brown comes from.
There's another... Well, I read it because I liked the movie so much. But there's another Elmore Leonard book. I don't remember the name of it. But I just remember this scene. And I, this is a stretch here to try to recreate it. But it was one of the funniest things I ever read because it's basically like these two guys are sticking up a supermarket in Michigan. And in very Elmore Leonard fashion.
Yeah, from Detroit,
And in super Elmore Leonard fashion, basically like a very old lady is shopping and she just does has no idea what they're doing. So one of the robbers is in a position where he basically has to like check her out. Like that's the most efficient thing to do. And, you know, these guys are his main protagonists are never like the actual monsters. So they're not going to kill her. So they got to like bag her groceries and get her out. And she's so rude and disrespectful to him. And just nasty. And so his like his coup de grace is he basically like he tells her that her coupons are invalid. And it's just like it's like a giant moral victory for him before they like leave the place with like whatever small bag of cash they took. It's so funny.
A version of that scene is in Out of Sight, which is also a brilliant, brilliant movie made the next year after Jackie Brown based on an Elmore Leonard book. Out of Sight, almost my favorite movie. Not the best movie, but it's perfect to me. And there's a scene where Ving Rhames has got to steal a car so he can bust George Clooney out of prison. Mm-hmm. This elaborate plan they have. And he, this older lady is wheeling her groceries out to the car and he stops and he says, oh, ma'am, let me help you with those. And she says, well, I didn't ask for your help, so don't expect a gratuity, right? And so instantly you're on his side and he goes, oh, that's okay, ma'am. I'm just going to take your car. Right. And it's this great, it's just like the coupons, is this little moral victory for a criminal who you're rooting for. And that's what he does, is get, you know, always there's always terrible evil, but it ends up being the cool criminal trying to take down the truly violent, dangerous one.
Yeah. Out of Sight is actually another amazing movie, another good rec. I want to just for a minute, and actually, in Michael Wolff's first book, which I did read and I totally defend, when he describes Steve Bannon as an Elmore Leonard character,
that was great.
Perfect description. It's like, Jesus. What do you think about us having a new King of the Jews, Ben?
I think it's great. I think it's great. I think we've lacked leadership for some time. We need people to tell us what to do, you know? Right? How to behave, who to vote for, you know? I mean, it's, you know, we're laughing because the ability to maintain shock is gone. I mean, just a couple of days ago when the King of the Jews was talking about Kashmir, right? Mm-hmm. And the Hindus, I mean, he's literally, well, you got Kashmir, had a lot of different names, and you got Muslims and Hindus. They don't like each other very much. Big problem.
You're like, big problem.
Holy Christ. I mean, it's enough right there not to reelect someone if he'd done everything else right. Like, he doesn't know anything. And he's not interested in anything. And, you know, he learned that day and was like, oh, I'll repeat that. You know, it's like, well, you're right. I mean, he like went on Wikipedia and looked up Kashmir. Right. He didn't do that.
No, I was going to say, somebody, it's, you know, way too generous.
They printed it for him.
Yeah, there's no way he did that.
Right. That's why somebody, I was promoting the CNN, CNN's for the last bunch of Sundays has been running a series of movies by the decade. And I was on last Sunday to promote it, and they played a clip from 92 of Errol Morris, the great Academy Award winning documentarian, interviewing Donald Trump. And for some reason, he asked him about Citizen Kane and Rosebud. And Trump's like, well, you know, Rosebud, no, they don't really know what it is. They don't, you know, but it worked. No one knows why they picked it. And it was my grandfather's name for my grandfather's bicycle. That's why he picked it. My grandfather wrote Citizen Kane. And so the
Trump said his grandfather wrote. Oh wait. I'm sorry. No, your grandfather did. Okay, I'm so confused by Trump's lies that I honestly was confused for a second. Okay, sorry. Go ahead.
One of the great shames has been that Trump. One of the great shames has been that Trump. Hang on. So you still there?
Yep. Good.
We're good. I have you?
Yeah. Okay, you're good.
Sorry.
Go ahead. Thanks.
One of the great shames of my life has been that Trump's favorite movie, he says, is Citizen Kane. But as I was listening to him talk about that in Rosebud, it's like he doesn't even know that it's a sled in the movie. And it suddenly hits you. you know, that movie's whatever it is, an hour and 52 minutes long. It's inconceivable he watched it start to finish, right? Like, you want to say to him, it's a sled, it burns in the end, you know, right? It's the symbol of his lost childhood. It's not, like, you don't have to be a, you don't, there's no genius in figuring out what happened there. So I had a nice line, at least, as we were talking, you know, I said, that's the president talking about there's things that are unknowable, but they're all knowable. You just have to read a book.
I remember that clip. I actually played that. I know that we played that at some point. It was
it escaped me.
And he's like, well, I mean, it's Rosebud, and you go for things, and it's funny because it's like, not only is he clearly not seeing the movie, but it's like the part of Trump that is the bizarre thing about Trump is that on one hand, nobody is like Trump and he's utterly bizarre. And then on the other hand, he's chameleon like. And so that was the phase of his life where he was trying, you know, he's talking to Earl Morris. So he needs to show that he actually has a deep New York intellectual streak. So he's doing all of these kind of like, he hasn't seen the movie and he's also trying to really get like, you know, I mean, materialism doesn't equal happiness. I mean, it's deep.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, he is so incapable of pulling it off. It is. And it reminds me, you mentioned our mutual friend and along with the host of the Young Turks, Cenk Uygur and Michael Shore, they're my two closest friends out here, two of my closest friends in the world. And I lived with Michael. I've lived with Michael twice in my life, once for a year and a half. But also when I moved to L.A., I stayed with him for the first 3 weeks I was here. So I was getting my feet. And it was, I recall then, but it must have been a couple years later, when early on in the Apprentice run, I'd watched it a couple times. And I was like, you know, I like this Apprentice show. I don't know anything about business, but I actually kind of learned things from it. And I think he's not a typical host, but he's good. It's fun. Right. Mm-hmm. And the way he fires people is fun. And I like that thing. And I'd seen maybe two episodes. And Michael says to me, I'm essentially quoting him. And this has got to be, I don't know, 2004 or 2005 at the latest, something like that. He goes, no, I'm not going to watch. I don't want you to watch. He's the worst person in the world. He's a horrible racist. He's ignorant. He doesn't know what he's doing. And he's perpetuating some great fraud. And I literally hate him more than any other person. And you should too. And I was like, well, Jesus. I was like, easy, Michael, whatever. You know, okay, great. Trump's the worst person in the world. Yeah, sure. Sure enough, Michael was on it, and he was on it early.
Well, there's some stiff competition, man. I mean, I guess with my reading habits, I would have said, I hear that. But guys, you got to check out this obscure senator in Brazil called J.R. Bolsonaro, because that guy.
Yeah, I got you. The world is strong. It's only our worldview that, I was just talking to somebody else real quick about, you know, when I went to Cuba, somebody who'd been to Cuba recently, a filmmaker, and he wants to make a movie there. And I was talking about when I went during the Elian crisis, and I went in 99 or 2000.
Right.
And you get there and you think, you know, I know my dad wrote a book called Confidel, and my dad was a not so much a supporter, but mostly thought, this was on the U.S. for screwing up this relationship, forcing his hand. I mean, they play baseball every day there. Like, they're 90 miles away. They shouldn't have been aligned. And if we'd been a decent country and not paranoid, we would have supported that revolution as all decent people should have. So anyway, I'm telling that story. But I remember when I went there, I still had this image because the manner I grew up, that this is sort of a reckless outlaw place, and we had to sneak in, right? You know, and they ask us, do you want your passport stamped? And then you get there, and there are things that are messed up. There are guards on the corners, and they want their citizens to tell on each other, right? So that's the horrible, horrible part, and it is horrible. Mm-hmm. But you get there, and you're like, Jesus, there's 10,000 Canadians here, right? There's people from all over Europe. Like, they don't care. Like, this isn't about us. We're the crazy ones in that regard.
Right.
These Canadians, you know how they got here? They took a flight from Toronto and then they landed. And they told their friends, I'm going to Cuba on vacation. Right? Yeah. And there were Swedes. My producer and I met these girls there. We were having coffee with them. And I'm trying to speak Spanish. And And I'm like, do you want to leave? And they're like, well, there's not a lot of opportunity here. We'd like to go. And I'm like, do you want to come to America? And they're like, no, no, we want to go to Spain. They speak Spanish.
Right.
You know?
And they have health care.
And I'm like,
we are used to having good health care here. Yes.
Right. That's right. And we probably get a job there. He's like,
right.
I'm like, oh, right. We're not the center of the freaking world.
Yeah. Right. But that is amazing that he would have that reaction, because I just think a lot of people – I mean, I never really paid attention to Trump one way or another. Like, I think The Apprentice was a little bit – I mean, that was a little bit back in the day. And then, you know, he was this racist buffoon guy during the Obama era, but it also was just like, eh, whatever. Like, this guy's just some, like, 80s loser. Who cares? And
right,
actually,
an opportunity for Obama to land a great line at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. You know, he was a
right,
right. That's right. He was just a caricature, a figure to mock.
Right. Actually, what shifted me, and I mean, this is maybe still to you know maybe just a defect, because I still find him very funny at times. But what shocked me, I remember when he finally declared he was running for president, was that his first first he came out and made those racist, right, despicable comments about Mexicans. And that was obviously the engine. I mean, he gave you the two engines of his campaign. He gave you fake economic populism, the core of racism and xenophobia. And then the third one was that he's funny. And I remember he was going on Bill O'Reilly, and he was just talking nonsense about, like, well, I'm going to go into Iraq and we're going to get the oil. And I mean, actually not nonsense. In fact, he was basically talking what we did, just in his own dumb way. And O'Reilly's like, well, you know, you keep saying George W. Bush was bad, but you sound a lot like him. And Trump just looks at him and he's like, yeah, I'm a little bit smarter. And I remember just watching. I was like, Jesus, this is hilarious. Yeah. I actually had no idea that this guy was funny until he started doing this. I thought he was just a disgusting jackass, which he is. But I didn't know that he had this ability to kind of flame people. And he certainly did.
And you're right. I don't know that he knows he's funny. I don't know. It certainly doesn't matter.
Right.
I think that was part of – I think you've touched on part of the reason why, obviously, that he's connected with some people, because there is this, you know, completely fake authenticity to him.
Right.
And most people who are funny are smart. You can't be funny without being smart. That was always my belief. Mm-hmm. And I still think it's incredibly hard to be – it's incredibly hard to be funny without being smart, but he has proven it, because no one can think he's bright enough to have this job, except, you know, I guess, you know, maybe you don't. I mean, but
him and all of the leadership class of the Republican Party and the Wall Street.
Right. Donors. I mean, if I were a yes, legit Republican, the notion that I'd be like, man, so George W. Bush and Donald Trump, these are our last two. This is what we've put out there.
Hey, man, they deliver the tax cuts. That's all they care about.
Can I share one theory with you? Because I don't get to talk. One thing that I don't understand, because I've been wrong a thousand times. Like, I think Mitt Romney is the perfect example of what is wrong with the Republican Party. Because you're going to, I think, agree with me.
Yeah, I like this.
This is a guy who has zero political risk for the rest of his life. Right, I get he may want to run for president again, but even that, I think, doesn't count. He just won. He's not up again until 2024. It's inconceivable that if he spoke out really against Trump, not just spoke out, but acted out, like, I'm not going to support him politically. I'll even go against my interests, because he must be stopped. We have to take a stand. We have to take this party back. Whatever that means, they'd still be, you know, they still wouldn't care. They still want to cut benefits for people who need them most. But you take that stand. And he is in no danger of losing, even if somehow in a poorly attended Republican primary in 2024, he got beaten to the right, by some crazed Trumpist. He'd run as an independent. He'd Joe Lieberman it. He's Mitt Romney. He's the most famous Mormon on the planet. He'd still win. And we all know, we think, by 2024, what he would do today would be seen as heroic. And the media would play him as heroic, as the one guy who took a stand, the principled guy who took the stand. And it's a freebie for Mitt Romney. The worst thing that happens to him is that Mitch McConnell strips him of whatever important committee assignments he has. But I don't even think he'd do that, because he's Mitt Romney. So it is a freebie for this guy to take shots at Trump, and the upside is a media hailing him as a hero, and even he won't do it.
My answer is that, and this has been my position 100% from the beginning, is that it's all, there might be a few stylistic differences, but the reason he won't do that is because he supports this agenda. I mean, I just think that's the bottom line. I don't think there's no daylight. I mean, you can run through the list of what they, and also, I mean, you know, we can game it out maybe, but the bottom line is that he's the president and he's unbelievably popular in the Republican Party. So maybe, but I don't think, I mean, certainly, look, Mitt Romney is not going to be the guy who's going to want to take any extra heat. But I just think the bottom line is that we can't separate Trump from the Republican Party. It's the same thing.
No.
Yeah.
I agree. No right-thinking Americans would disagree with that. I would want, because Mitt Romney, like all these guys, and I don't blame him for this, he has an ego and he wants to be president again. That's his best path. It's a freebie, and it's a freebie. And
but he'd never get through a Republican primary, though. I mean, if he ran for president after getting – oh, no way. That Donald Trump, they're going to put that guy on Rushmore for that party. They love him.
Yeah, I don't know. Whatever. By 2024, we're going to – I'm certain that in general – we're going to have a different consensus.
By 2024, well, we might have a different consensus, but the Republican Party is going to, there's going to be some like state auditor who says that, black people should be retroactively stripped of their citizenship back to like 1670, who will run for president. I mean,
Chris Kobach's going to have his hand raised saying, I will faithfully execute the Constitution of the United States.
I mean, that's horrifying. Yeah. I don't know if he'll be elected president, but I think the bottom line is that if you look at the Republican trajectory and you read, Democracy in Chains, which to me is like the best book on understanding how the Republican Party works, they have gone all in, and Trump has kind of intuited it in his own kind of dumb way, which is like, we're not going to expand our base. And what we can do is, even though we have a narrow base, we represent the interests materially of the most powerful people in the world, in the country. Not, the average Republican voter, but the still vast majority of ultra wealthy people that fund us, because at the end of the day, our policy set is for them. And then we're going to combine that with a nativist xenophobia. And if we can make the courts restrictive enough, peel back the Voting Rights Act enough, do this terrorist immigration policy enough, maybe we can engineer the electorate enough where we can just sort of keep, I mean, look, winning races that we lose the popular vote on, but we just get the map right. I mean, I think, that's what they do. That's the plan. And so I do think a guy like Kobach, I mean, because of his actual connections to white nationalists and so on, I'm sure people like Paul Ryan and Mitt Romney would like a little bit more plausible deniability and maybe an order or two of separation. But on the merits, it's all the same. And, I think the popularity of Trump really shows that.
You're right. Yeah. I mean, there's no – because guys like – not even guys. There aren't that many guys. But a guy like Romney doesn't do it. So
right.
I got you. I still find him to be a perfect test case to prove your point, essentially. So that's the, obviously you're right. Now, Democracy in Chains, is that an Elmore Leonard book?
Actually, Elmore Leonard could have picked some of the characters from that book and it would have been actually very funny. I think it would have been great. Do you have some more? I mean, we've already given so many great movie and book recommendations, but do you have any movie recommendations to leave us on?
Yeah, I just throw out like a couple. We mentioned Network, so I'm sure a bunch of people listen to the Majority Report, know Network, see Network. It's worth re-seeing. So I'd see Network again. I'd see two movies from 1957. Great ones that, again, some people probably face in the crowd where you realize that Andy Griffith can act, Bud Schulberg's script, Elia Kazan's movie. That is a Trump-like character. I mean, not just a Trump-like character, a Glenn Beck-like character, an O'Reilly-like character, and it's amazing and perfect, and you'll be stunned at how prescient that movie is. Sweet Smell of Success from 57, about sort of how easy it is, how access corrupts. It's access to a columnist, but it works on the sacrifices you will make, the principles you will give up, to get in with the most important, powerful people in the world. It's the best access movie maybe ever made. And then, like, you know, another 70s movie, 3 Days with Condor, like, a plot inside the CIA. Just, it's the great, it, to me, it's the best government overreach paranoia movie, because it's also kind of plausible, right?
Right.
Like, it's not the head of the CIA. It's not officially the CIA, but it's enough guys there to get something awful and dangerous done in the name of, quote unquote, protecting America from running out of energy. But those are, you know, all of those to me are, and I mentioned another one, The Conversation, and the Coppola sandwich movie in between the two Godfathers about what we can do with electronic surveillance. And it was primitive back then, but it is it holds true today. And given the world we live in now, that movie seems particularly chilling.
Definitely.
Those are all, and you know, I'll throw one more: Billy Wilder, Ace in the Hole, 1951. Again, about a reporter, sort of how the media can go wrong in pursuing a story that'll raise their profile.
Awesome.
So all those are perfect and great, and everybody will love them.
Go watch good movies. Go read Elmore Leonard. I'll grab an Elmore Leonard book if I can before I fly to Chicago tonight. Matter of fact.
Yeah, you can't go wrong. I mean, just there are 20 that are nearly perfect.
Ben Mankiewicz, you're awesome. Watch Ben and Turner classic movies. Catch him sometimes on TYT. Ben, thanks a million as always.
Thanks, Michael. Great talking to you.
Take care, man. All right, folks. We're going to take a brief break. We've got a ton to get to. And to do that with us is Matt Binder. We're going to talk about this wild Southern Poverty Law Center report. And also, I really need to get to this story about the Democratic congresspeople demanding answers on the DOJ relationship to Lava Jato. If you supported Lava Jato, whether you were The Guardian, New York Times, Washington Post, or Jimmy Dore, you are bear some responsibility for the fires in the Amazon. And I want to juxtapose what's happening in the Amazon. And we're doing this very consciously because, depressingly enough, a story in a video that just talks about the lungs of the earth are burning because of Western capitalism and a fascist in Brazil and the CIA. That'll probably get, I don't know, several thousand views.
12, maybe.
12. If we add mega moron Dave Rubin doesn't understand rainforest but likes Bolsonaro, that could probably shoot up to about 50 or 60, maybe 70,000. And there's actually a reason. One, it's fun to make fun of Dave Rubin. But two, if you need some Rubin dunking to understand the world's greatest eco crisis, I am willing to do that. I'm willing to make that sacrifice. All right, we're going to take a brief break. We'll be right back with Matt Binder.
your lucky day. Well, here's your lucky day. And really, really, really could happen. Yes, it really, really, really could happen. The days they seem to fall for you, well, just let them go.
Welcome back, Majority Report. Joining us now in studio, in the flesh, on his birthday, Matt Binder, Eminem Friday 2019. How's it going, Matt?
It's going good. It's a pleasure to be here with you today, Michael.
Pleasure to have you.
You're my long friend, time friend, who's been a friend.
Is everything okay with the sound, guys?
Something happened here? Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah. Now we can hear you.
Did everyone miss my joke? Wonderful. Wonderful.
That's all right. It wasn't that funny. So let's talk about Doomed. Hey, it's better that we get right to talking about your good podcast versus your unfunny joke.
Okay.
So let's get to the Doomed podcast. Seriously, I hope everybody who's watching it is listening and becoming a patron. Most people know, but remind everybody what you kind of do with Doomed.
Yeah, sure. So Doomed is a podcast where it's also a YouTube live stream show, youtube.com/Matt Binder, where basically, I talk about the latest going-ons in the right, online with, you know, the trolls of the right, you know, internet conspiracies, all that sorts of fun stuff that it seems to have completely taken over every aspect of our life since, I don't know, the past 10 years.
You're by the way, just to be clear, one of the many things that I like is you're total Bernie 2020. You're not into any of this other nonsense, right?
Of course. What are you? Good are you?
I mean, I know. I just think particularly in the last couple of days, it's just like...
I mean, honestly, I was a Seth Moulton guy until today.
Seth Moulton guy. Did he drop out yet?
He dropped out today, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, we didn't even headline that.
Who right, cares? Because it's incredible that a guy who's a U.S. congressman couldn't even get on a debate stage where you have... Marianne Williamson and Andrew Yang.
Marianne Williamson's cool. So
I love Marianne Williamson. Out of it. But I mean, compared to who she is and who he is, at least in politics.
Well, you know, yes and no, right? Like, actually, I was thinking about this because people always say this. But the bottom line is like, you know what? A national best-selling author who's been in some form of the public eye for decades versus like a backbench congressperson who's never said or done anything notable. I mean, I don't know. I think she actually is a significantly more relevant person than he is.
I honestly did not know who she was until she started running, to be quite frank.
Well, I mean, sure, but I'm not saying she's like a... Yeah.
Bernie mentioned him in the Our Revolution book. She has a paragraph. I'll see if I can pull it up.
But she really?
Yeah, it's like she spoke with him once or like said, "Run, Bernie, run." So she was on the Bernie train in 2016.
I think honestly she's going to be on the Bernie train when she drops down as well.
So. I think so too.
I have no doubt that she will and that will be the only way. If she doesn't endorse Bernie, then you'll get a criticism of Marianne Williamson from me. Till then, she gets nothing but props. I think it's like it's interesting because just watching though that narrative of like first it when 2016 it was all like Hillary Clinton going he's offering a pony and it's you know it's unrealistic blah 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 and then everything changed to well why does he even need to run everybody else supports what he supports
right.
Of course it's like you know first of all they don't. I mean, that's quite obvious. And then secondly, first the reason is because he actually has a movement and credibility behind him and he reconfigured American politics in the most positive direction we've seen in decades. And then also because he's actually pretty committed to this stuff. And so what he's going to do is after shifting the whole game to the left, where even totally insincere people like Kamala Harris lie about their healthcare positions – constantly reverses herself. Now he is redefining the next stage of where we're going to go politically, which is why his criminal justice, labor, and Green New Deal proposals are off the charts.
Right, right. But also we have to mention that Bernie's also backtracked on that Medicare for All plan by, of course, coming out with provisions that benefited unions even more than they'd already had. So, I mean, of course, what a huge backtrack from Bernie Sanders. I tried to do it with a straight face.
You're talking about the Washington Post headline. And like, I love how like all of the labor union leaders just had to even ones that haven't endorsed them were just like, no, we really appreciate the proposal. This is just completely insane, delusional, right, and dishonest. Right. But
the idea that it even changed anything in Medicare for All, no, it was literally just additions that benefited union members even more so. It's not like he went back into Medicare for All and changed anything.
It would be like, like Roosevelt will just be like, and that's why this even better deal will expand. And the press was like, a better deal? I guess he opposes the New Deal. The four freedoms. Way to reverse yourself on Social Security, jerk.
Right.
I mean, what do you honestly make? I'm genuinely fascinated because, okay, there's the obvious people that should hate and oppose Bernie and what he represents, and that is the capital class and oligarchs and lobbyists and, you know, all of the small number of people that benefit from the system, including actually many elite members, obviously, of the Democratic Party. And so their antagonism to him is just perfectly rational. It's like, yes, right, of course, because he's saying that people are going to have well-being and healthcare and food and housing at the expense of you hoarding all wealth and resources and destroying the earth. And I guess, you know, if you're hoarding all the resources and destroying the earth, you would not like that Make People's Lives Better program. I find people, and I'm not even saying, like, look, obviously I don't understand not supporting Bernie. I'm pretty upfront about that. But like, look, you can occasionally, once in a blue moon, I will meet a person who doesn't support Bernie Sanders, and they just kind of say, like, no, he's a good guy, but, you know, I don't know, I'm more of a centrist, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, you know, okay, sure, fair enough, whatever. I will never understand the just deranged obsessive hatred of this guy. I just don't get it.
I mean, it's literally,
it's so bizarre.
And it's so bizarre. This is coming from someone who in the general election voted for Hillary Clinton.
Right.
It's literally because he had the audacity to run against her. And not only that, he continued running to push his movement, even when most people say that he, you know, he was clearly going to lose. Okay, fine, whatever. But him running only got us to the point we are today. It didn't hurt Hillary's chances anyway.
He campaigned his heart out for her.
Oh, of course.
I was actually talking to somebody who was involved in 2016. And it's funny because, you know, he's supportive of Bernie, but he's not even as strong as I am. But he was like, I'll tell you what, though. He's like, Bernie gets a lot of unfair raps, but he's like, the one about him not supporting Hillary, he's like, I was there. Like, you know, he wasn't in the Bernie campaign, but he was around some of these events. And he's like, I physically saw this guy. Nobody campaigned harder for her. And of course, you know, if you have any kind of longer memory and, you know, I don't know, well, you know what? Whatever.
I mean,
because I'm just tired of all the Clinton stuff.
Just to add to that, though, like literally, like I feel like we've beaten this with a dead horse.
Not only did Hillary Clinton, can I just say that? Not only did Hillary Clinton not drop out after Obama had clearly won, she was literally saying things like musing on people getting assassinated.
Right.
Like,
right,
I mean, she was just like, like, these things go on for a while. Bobby Kennedy was popped very late in the primary.
Right.
You know, I mean, like, that was, you know, a lot of people have stayed on after they should have dropped out, maybe even said more provocative things than people should have health care.
Right, right. No, but, but you know, if you even look at the dates that were done for Hillary, all the different campaign events that happened, I'm pretty sure other than herself, obviously, her husband and her daughter, Bernie Sanders did more events than anyone besides those three.
Absolutely.
Which is incredible.
And I didn't take any breaks to go to Little St. James either.
Yeah, I wish Bernie had it in for Hillary as much as these people think he does, because he probably could have milked the email issue a little bit more and maybe knocked her out and won the election.
100%. That's the other thing that's extraordinary to me, is the guy, like, if you were just running as an actual proper campaign just to beat somebody, because clearly in the beginning of the campaign, he was so diplomatic because I think obviously in their heads, they were running to make a point and they didn't want to hurt her in the general election, which is exactly why he's like, you know,
I don't care about your damn emails.
Right. Which is amazing. He never gets any credit for not the damn emails. I remember sitting there, honestly, as a supporter of his, and I was kind of pissed because I don't care about the emails, but it's like, you know, you use what you got.
Right, right.
Like, I don't know here.
I mean, personally, it's too bad the Podesta emails didn't come out during the primary because then Bernie could have been the guy who put together the Pizzagate thing, and then he could have been...
It's Comet Ping Pong. I've never trusted decadent bourgeoisie art and performance installations. I had no idea how dark it was. That would have been so funny if
there's
he did.
There's children in the damn basement!
If he did. He could have talked about Jeffrey Epstein. He could have done the real stuff. I mean, while I was fighting against the CAFTA trade deal, Donald and Bill Clinton and Kevin Spacey were going to Africa. I wonder what that plane trip was about.
Speaking of plane trips,
it was just a connecting flight.
This is so random, but you remember the crazy press and anti-Bernie basically hubbub that happened when he went to go see the Pope?
No.
You don't remember that?
I don't even remember.
During
I can't keep track of all
the 2016 election, Bernie went to go see the Pope, and everyone made a big deal because something, I believe, like the plane menu offered like lobster bisque or something like that. No. It was like, bourgeois Bernie.
Well, I do remember like when the big expose of him wearing a winter coat came out. I remember
that. And it was his one coat that was gifted to him that he's had for like 10 years.
This guy in his 70s wears a winter coat in New England. What an asshole.
Right, right.
Oh my God. These people are insane.
I got to tell you though, do people not realize, are they really that out of touch that like this old guy who has a 20-year-old winter coat that he's worn every year for the past 20 years that was gifted to him, he didn't even buy, probably one of his prized possessions because it costs more money than he probably would have spent if he bought a coat himself.
Right.
I connect with that. That's my winter jacket. I wouldn't buy an expensive winter jacket.
Can we play a game called Guess Who This Hack Works For after reading
the tweet? Kamala Harris's com guy. Yeah.
Oh Kamala Harris's com guy is really bad. He's basically a glorified Twitter troll.
Yeah, even if you like her, I mean, he's just bad.
Yeah, he's not good.
Also, if you like her,
if you don't want to die prematurely because of a lack of health care, you might have a problem with this. So tell us about this story that the SPLC revealed about this white nationalist at the State Department. This is a really disturbing, crazy story.
Right, right. I just want to say this up front, though. Seems like both times I've come on the show recently, you guys have just happened to have me on after I've had Michael Hayden of the SPLC Hate Watch on. And his stories both times on the show. So I want to shout him out, Michael Hayden on Twitter, Michael E. Hayden. You guys should definitely have him on the Majority Report or TMBS. He's been doing great work. And he's the one who did all the work to find out about this guy who worked for the State Department. And basically, this guy was a foreign affairs officer with the Bureau of Energy Resources, which is part of the State Department. And his name is Matthew Q. Gebert. And I made the joke that, middle name Q, interesting.
Right. That was interesting. Got to follow the threads.
Right. QAnon connection, maybe. But anyway, so this guy Gebert has, and this is really important to drive home, and I wanted to really drive this home when I had Michael on my podcast last week to talk about this. This guy started working for the State Department in 2013.
So that's really important. This is not a political appointee and has nothing to do with the Trump administration. This is a bureaucrat inside the State Department.
Right. He started as a fellow in 2013. So you have a young guy here.
Yep.
And in 2015 is when he starts to get radicalized.
Yep.
So he's already working for the State Department. So it's not like they went out and happened to hire a white supremacist. But he's getting radicalized while working for the State Department. He's listening to these right-wing white supremacist podcasts. He's reading these different white supremacist personalities online. Big fan of Mike Enoch, a.k.a. Mike Pinovich of The Right Stuff and The Daily Show. This is the guy who is one of the earliest internet white supremacists to really sort of gain a following with his personality and with his sort of – this sort of like media network he created on the right. And later came out that white supremacists actually doxed him, people who didn't like him on the right, who didn't like him, they doxed him, and it turned out that he had a Jewish wife. Interesting, but some real problems there. And he's also the guy who came up with the whole putting the parentheses around Jewish names.
Okay.
So this is a guy who you might not know him by name, but his work is well within the white supremacist mainstream that we now know. And so he's the one who really radicalized this guy. This guy, Gebert, became friendly with him, was a regular sort of guest on his show, you know, just someone who listened to the show who would call in. And he ended up meeting with these guys. There were sources who said that there were well-known white supremacists in that world coming to this guy's home in the D.C. area. And he even ended up leading the Washington, D.C. chapter of this white supremacist organization. And here he is working for the State Department. And again, I just want to say, you know, you hear he's just a foreign affairs officer with the Bureau of Energy Resources. You might think, oh, that sounds like a long-winded, title. He might not have been someone so high up ranking. But actually, from what Michael Hayden of the SPLC was telling me, you know, from fellow to this, he was really on his way up. And it became such a problem that Michael ended up putting out another report a few days later that he actually broke on the show, on Doomed, that his brother had actually reported him to the FBI saying, hey, the State Department employs this guy who's my brother, who is very active in the white supremacist movement, and if you read the article quotes his brother literally says he was fucking like scared of his brother, like disgusted by what he was seeing. And so he had to actually go and contact the FBI.
It's like the Unabomber thing.
Right, right.
So what happened? What is the state of things now?
So right now, the guy who ended up, this guy was able to buy his own home in the D.C., Virginia area. So, you know, he's getting paid well. His wife actually is not just an innocent bystander. She actually is also a very much part of the white supremacist movement. Mm-hmm. They both were well known under there.
And is this 100% like validated, correct, yes, thoroughly reported? Have they commented on it?
Right. They have not commented on it. Okay. The State Department, though, has suspended this individual while they look into it.
Right.
The wife has also been suspended from where she worked. She was working for like the tourism board of some state. I can't remember which off the top of my head. She's also been suspended. And they have two kids. So this gets even sadder because you know those kids are not only being hurt by, you know, what's going on, their parents being suspended from work, but also these kids are growing up
in the sick environment.
In the sick environment, yes, exactly.
Right, right.
And then, you know, so you have this going on, and it's just really a sad story. I mean, it's easy to shit on this guy and this woman, and obviously it's well-deserved, and I'm going to shit on them.
Careful but with then the profanity.
I forget that we're on right.
I don't know.
Right, right.
You know?
Right.
It's the new... Because everybody was just like, everybody should be deplatformed, and now all of a sudden, now everything gets... This is the trend.
Right.
Any video title that has to do with... Did you know that you can get demonetized for like Rashida Tlaib, Ilhan Omar?
Because
they've went from incentivizing this alt-right algorithm to now they just want to make it like CNN on the internet.
Right. Well, I've actually... My YouTube channel got monetized.
Oh, you got monetized?
And then got demonetized.
Entirely,
the whole channel.
It's totally because of the subjects you cover, because they make no thoughtful distinction about covering horrific things versus promoting horrific things.
I can say, though, I'm back to being monetized again.
Look at that. Wait a second. Let me see. What should I give you for that?
I'll let you give this to me before I give my one extra addendum.
Okay, go ahead.
But if you look through the videos, though, almost every other video of mine, well, you can't look through the videos because it's only on the back end. Almost every other video of mine is actually demonetized or barely showing ads due to the content. And when I say the content, I mean, I am dropping probably an F-bomb once or twice in the video, but I don't think it's that.
No.
I actually think it's the titles of my shows. A lot of the titles of my shows are white supremacist,
yep.
white nationalist.
Oh, it's all the titles.
Whatever, yes.
It's all titles.
And here's an interesting thing,
all
actually.
Titles.
The last episode, my last week episode with Michael Hayden on this, I had put in the title white nationalist. And I used this program called Restream to simultaneously stream on all these different platforms. And Twitch, interestingly, is the first time I've ever discovered this, would not allow me to put the word nationalist in my title.
Right.
They would not, like, they wouldn't save it. However, though, I was able to swap out the word nationalist with supremacist, and that was okay. So I think we got a problem here. I think we got a big problem here.
Yes.
This is the reverse of when, I don't know if you guys recall this, but Facebook for a time said white supremacist content on our network is banned. You cannot post it.
Right.
White nationalist content, though, is okay because there's a distinction between supremacy and nationalism.
Facebook accepted that
Facebook
distinction.
Did, yes, and it was part of their policy.
So disgusting.
Until the Christchurch shooting, and they reversed course and said, on second thought, there is no distinction.
You cannot put nerds in charge of this thing. And you cannot have, you know, the whole base of a conversation that has to do with petitioning oligarchic tech monopolies to monitor and police and decide these things is catastrophic. You need to break these companies up. You need to, in my opinion, you need to nationalize them. And then you need actual journalistic processes to determine them. And if that's cost prohibitive, then they need to be broken up in a way that it isn't cost prohibitive. And also it is not cost prohibitive. These companies have unlimited resources,
right.
And they certainly know how to spend it where they precisely need to spend it.
If we actually got a minute, could I just tell you a story involved with that?
So ridiculous. But it was just, I just want to really emphasize that it was not, because I was noticing even Dan Crenshaw, when he was going after Hassan Piker, he didn't say it explicitly, but in between, you know, not discussing the actual issue that Hassan was trying to highlight, which was actually important. And then in addition to that, and then, you know, and then saying that Hassan was triggered or whatever, he had a tweet where he was like, what's really bad is that, you know, Google and YouTube profit off of this by TYT. And so it's like, what do you think he's doing there?
Right.
You know, if you play this game, and none of these companies have no, there's no journalist, they're pretending they're platforms, and there's no labor, journalistic, governmental oversight. And so, you know, it's like, this is why I say, like, it can be satisfying, maybe even necessary in a couple of instances to go after individual creators to deplatform them or something. But as a strategy, it's a disaster,
right?
Because
right.
Well, it's only going to shrink. And then including you get hit for covering and exposing this stuff,
right?
Because no one's going to make any meaningful distinction. It's just not strategic.
Right. Well, this past week, actually,
yeah.
Facebook released their audit of conservative bias. Now, last year, Facebook announced that they asked two separate organizations to conduct two separate audits.
Right.
A civil rights audit that looked at how marginalized groups were treated on Facebook, and a conservative audit looking at how conservatives were treated on Facebook.
Right.
And a civil rights leader took over the conservative audit, and they spoke with civil rights organizations to conduct this civil rights audit, which has already had two reports come out that basically detailed how different marginalized groups are actually hurt by Facebook's policies. But this week, the conservative audit came out, and Facebook had John Kyle, former Republican Senator John Kyle, put together this Facebook audit. And the audit is really weird because you think, especially being that Facebook AOK'd this, it would look at internal Facebook data, it would have some sort of numbers to support whatever claims are being made. But no, this audit that was released just this week, actually late, because John Kyle actually had to fill in for John McCain in the Senate.
Right.
So this audit that was released is actually just John Kyle going around to 133 different conservative individuals and groups and asking, hey, how does Facebook treat you? And then just providing that as the evidence.
Right.
So Facebook is taking basically conservatives saying, this is how.
I don't think it's treating me well.
Yes.
I'll tell you that.
Exactly. So they're taking that
right.
and creating policy around it. Now, luckily, according to Facebook, most of their policies are already covering the issues that the conservatives brought up, meaning they weren't strictly related to whatever the conservatives' complaints were. But one of the policies they did change is that they're now letting medical tubing allowed in Facebook ads. Previously, Facebook had banned any use of medical tube imagery in their Facebook ads. And now the reason conservatives were had a problem with this is because anti-abortion groups need to show that tubing in their imagery when they conduct their Facebook ads to show, oh, look what happens to these these fetuses.
Right.
And so Facebook is now going to allow them to do that.
See, the bottom line is you need to make these companies. They need to be public utilities. And yes, it's going to mean that the First Amendment applies. That's my view. But even more narrowly, you need to demand and work to somehow acknowledge that these are journalistic platforms and they need to have ombudsmen and editors and so on. Because all that's happening right now is that these companies are just either shrinking the discourse in a way that just try to like push people to CNN videos or whatever. And it has a disastrous effect on really important independent left media and investigative journalism. Or they're, you know, they're going to actually outsource this stuff to neoconservative think tanks on foreign policy and right-wing nut jobs and hacks on this stuff. It's a disaster. We got to do two quick stories. It'll be a freebie today.
First, for old time's sake.
Yep. Ooh.
Needed a drink.
Deep cut. You're still drinking that stuff? Don't you have a family to take care of?
Dude, how do you think I have to take care of my family and stay awake?
Oh, sorry. well, I mean, but God, we got to... I don't know. Yep. You know, like Matt can discard his health. Matt doesn't have any obligations. You have obligations, man. Come on.
All right, well.
You know? Let's see. So,
hi, Ezra. Hi, Enid, in case they're watching. Ezra might be watching that.
Hi, Ezra. How you doing, man? Let's do two quick stories, and then we're going to do a freebie Friday. We've got to be out of here by about 2:15, so we're going to try to get through a lot of stuff. But we got to talk about the Amazon. And as I said earlier, the door to talking about the Amazon is, well, first let's get an actual serious report on this. This is a sound from Democracy Now! This morning with an Amazon Watch. Andrew Miller from Amazon Watch explains the stakes to Amy Goodman.
Problem in Brazil.
Let's restart that. Amazon Watch's Andrew Miller was on
Something
Democracy
that wouldn't
now.
Have happened just 5 years ago.
Not just the fires that we're seeing, which of course are incredibly visual and have really drawn the world's attention to what's happening, but the scope of the problem is much broader, really, in terms of the policies and the rhetoric of the Bolsonaro administration, which is not the first time, of course, that the Amazon has been under assault and not the first time that indigenous peoples have been facing threats. But we've really seen an acceleration of and, you know, an exacerbation of a lot of the symptoms. Of course, the fires, as you mentioned, are up essentially 80% over the same period last year. But we're also seeing other symptoms like deforestation rates also being up, you know, in a very terrifying way in recent months. And the pressures and threats that indigenous peoples are facing on the ground from the illegal miners, from the land grabbers, from the loggers.
So can you explain what Bolsonaro is charging, that NGOs are setting these fires? Talk about the map of the areas that indigenous people control, where these fires are.
Well, we've seen 10,000 fires lit just in the last week. So the map of where the fires are is across the Brazilian Amazon and other parts of Brazil, actually. But if you look at the map of Brazil, if you look at the Brazilian Amazon from space, essentially, in some cases you can see where the indigenous territories are because that's essentially where the trees are still standing. You know, so these fires are being set in areas where people are trying to, you know, want to carry out different kinds of agricultural activities. But as you saw in the video, they're also going into indigenous territories. And that's, again, symptomatic of the broader policies that we're seeing from the Bolsonaro administration. They have said in many cases, you know, essentially they want to open up protected areas and indigenous territories to these, to extractive activities, to the agribusiness lobby, or to agribusiness activities there. And so, again, the fires are just sort of the latest manifestation of those policies.
And this is exactly right. This is when the economist said that he had a lot of innovative ideas. This is what they're talking about. This is explicitly and precisely what the Wall Street Journal wanted when they endorsed him. And if we look more broadly, there is no question that this is the broader context of U.S. foreign policy towards delegitimizing the Workers' Party and making Lula da Silva a political prisoner. This is a new report. Leaked documents to Open Democracy show Brazil's Bolsonaro has grave plans for the Amazon rainforest.
And this is specifically about whipping up using rhetoric to basically attack indigenous people, basically in a fascist, you know, grab of land and resources.
Bolsonaro has said things like Africans have hurt Brazil. He's regularly called for the stripping of indigenous protections, and you need to have ethnic cleansing for ecocide. So that's the strategy of the Bolsonaro government. I love that Bolsonaro, in response to a tweet from Emmanuel Macron, resorted to just ludicrous pseudo-woke language and accused him of colonialism, when really what Bolsonaro is an agent, a pure puppet of U.S. corporate and Canadian corporate interests who's committing mass terrorism and death in his own country on behalf of those interests. And I want to put one really important thing in the story, and then we'll get to the fun part, which we can all enjoy. The Lava Jato investigation, which I've covered so many times on TMBS in this show, and I hope people can increasingly understand why, because the stakes of this are J.R. Bolsonaro is the greatest threat to human life on Earth, with all of the supporters behind him, including the Department of Justice and all of these various Wall Street interests and so on. If you supported Lava Jato process in any way, as almost all of the press did, you bear a responsibility for this. And there's a really important move, including The Guardian, New York Times, Washington Post, Jimmy Dore. It's true.
Just a weird name to end on that list.
Well, it's a weird name, but it's YouTube. So, you know, people got to be more thoughtful. Representative Hank Johnson has asked the DOJ for answers on Brazil corruption and the persecution of former President Lula da Silva. This is a press release, and 13 people have signed this, 13 congressmen. I'm going to read really quickly. Rahul Grijalva of Arizona, Eleanor Holmes Norton of D.C., Jared Huffman of California, Susan Wild of Pennsylvania, Adriano Espalat of New York, Veronica Escobar of Texas, Ilan Omar of Minnesota, Deb Holland of New Mexico, Mark Pocan of Wisconsin, Jesus Chuy Garcia of Illinois, Emmanuel Cleaver of Missouri, Rocana of California, have all signed a letter that was led by Congressman Hank Johnson of Georgia. This is what Johnson said in his press release. There's strong evidence that Brazil's former president Lula was the target of a highly political operation involving the current justice minister that was intended to keep him off the ballot in last year's elections, which he almost certainly would have won, Rep. Johnson said. We need to be sure that the DOJ was not part of this tainted process. Now, we know from all of the Lava Jato leaks that the process of persecuting Lula was totally corrupt and dishonest. And Lula has steadily said, including in a new video yesterday where he said Hillary Clinton does not like Latin America, that Barack Obama was not ready to be president, and that almost saying, and also saying that if they do let me out of jail, they should know that I am going to do politics and campaign across the country until the day I die. This guy is amazing. He really is the best political talent on earth. We know, though, that the whole process that was implemented from Lava Jato, and there was clear, I mean, the DOJ coordination is on the public record, including giving fine money to the Lava Jato team instead of the Brazilian state, that the timeline correlates with the discovery of new oil resources off the coast of Brazil that was going to be held by Petrobras, the state oil company, which the Lula and Dilma governments used to fund social programs with, and which now, in addition to everything else and all the other destruction of Lava Jato, has been bankrupt and also cost numerous jobs and significantly damaged the Brazilian and Latin American economy. So everybody bears a consequence here. Lula had a double-digit lead. Those elections should be annulled, and he should be freed immediately, and everybody should be calling for that. Now, there's another guy that had some thoughts about Bolsonaro, and that is, you know, I criticize a lot of people, but I've always maintained this is the stupidest guy. There is no greater fusion of stupid and craven. I absolutely would pick Jimmy Dore in some type of game over this guy.
Yeah,
this, no one worse than this guy.
Dave is the archetypal useful dumb guy.
Absolutely. Here's Dave Rubin reminding us of his deep insight on J.R. Bolsonaro.
What is your opinion on Brazilian Prime Minister Bolsonaro?
Oh my God.
Regarding...
What?
Can we just play that again? You haven't seen this before?
You literally have to just not have paid attention to anything whatsoever in the past, like, how many years?
No, Matt, to be fair, Dave has been paying attention to the important stuff. You got to watch the whole clip. Don't worry about pronouncing his name. There's higher priorities here. Like, I don't know, terrorizing gay kids in schools. Check it out.
What is your opinion on Brazilian Prime Minister Bolsonaro regarding, there's a lot of things moving here, deforestation of the rainforest. P.S. I'm a Christian. I'd bake you a cake, though. You know, I don't know enough about him, but it sounds like he really hates Marxism and he's really pushing Brazil to become more of a world leader and that he actually is for capitalism and he's trying to get some of the SJW stuff out of the schools. I just saw a tweet by him a day or two ago. So on that front, and I don't know a ton about him, that all sounds good to me. And as a Christian, I appreciate your offer to bake me a cake.
Oh man, that was a thank you for playing that. What a fantastic birthday gift. Thank you.
Can we also just remind everybody in terms of like that actually even the Bolsonaro government itself is apparently has major concerns at how poorly received Brazil is in the world right now. Germany has cut off funding for at least one program related to the Amazon, and Merkel and Macron are calling for a G7 meeting to deal with what's happening in the Amazon. Lula was the most popular politician on earth when he was president, and Celso Amorim was called the best foreign minister in the world. So in terms of like really making Brazil better positioned in the world, might need to rethink that one, dummy Dave.
The funny thing to me is before he brought up that he read a tweet or two from him, I was assuming that all he knew about him was deforestation, and his first response to hearing that was, well, it's great to hear he hates Marxism.
I mean, it basically was. This was before. To be fair, I'm sure Dave, this was several months ago. I'm sure Dave is totally up on this and will clear his schedule of really deep podcasts that he has planned about, I don't know, like Oberlin students like protesting teepees or something in order to deal with the fact that the lungs of planet Earth are getting burned up. I have no doubt that Dave is planning content.
More likely Tim Pool is going to be on next week.
Yes, Brendan.
I think it's in poor taste that we would make fun of Dave on a day of mourning.
Well, that's a good point. And what might be a day of mourning for Dave Rubin is a day of joy and celebration for most humans. And of course, I'm talking about the death of David Koch.
I'd like to point out once again that today is my birthday.
You're having a good birthday,
happy
bro.
Birthday.
Look,
what a gift.
I think the just general principle always applies, which is like okay, this is a great joke from our buddy comedian David Feldman. Check out the David Feldman show. As per his request, billionaire David Koch will be cremated along with the rest of planet Earth.
Oh, no.
I mean, look, we all know the Koch brothers. If you haven't yet, go pick up a copy of Jane Mayer's Dark Money to understand what these people have done going back to their father. I mean, these are two, you know, they've... so much to harm American democracy, so much to hurt so many people, create so much injustice, suffering, and poverty. But they did put some seed money into this dynamic company.
My father said to me, Wyatt, you can do whatever you want to in life. Just make sure you do it well and you do it with passion. Every day I go to the office, I enjoy creating the clothes. Be bold means to me, be authentic, be real, be yourself, be confident, and always be a gentleman, but still have that tenacity that no one can take away from you. I want my shirts to be able to be worn in the boardroom, or in a discoteca, or a nightclub, or on a yacht. I really wanted to create something that's fun, outside the box, cool, trendy, yet really bold and interesting.
God, that's so sad, man.
Those shirts.
Those
shirts.
Benzer, you going to the discoteca for your birthday?
These are my funeral clothes.
Oh, my gosh.
Are you honoring the David Koch memory?
There should be a flash mob at the funeral, all in white Koch gear.
They're not for everyone, but if you could pull it off, you could pull it off.
They're about $90.
I spent a lot of time at the, what was it, the discotheque? Is that what he calls it?
Yeah, you know, we use the phrase trust fund baby fairly loosely here on the show.
It is a good phrase.
But when it comes to the Koch brothers, whose father made his money building oil industries for both Stalin, which, you know, you could excuse, and Hitler.
Which you cannot excuse.
Which you cannot excuse.
That's right.
And they literally had like this Nazi maid who like made them go through all this terrible stuff when they were younger. And they,
you must go to the bathroom again.
The whole,
if you read about their maid, you will feel sympathy for them. Actually, yeah. Maybe it's a good thing to talk about David Koch's.
Their whole like philanthropy was started because their dad wanted, you know, I mean, like a lot of philanthropy, to reduce his tax liabilities.
Right.
And that's when you see, you know, the David Koch blah 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 center, which is all over New York City. Everything is funded by the Kochs. It's just because they're reducing their tax liabilities. They don't, it's like a fun way for them to put their name on stuff and not pay taxes.
Right. I mean, for as long as I've known who the Koch brothers were, I go through like the grocery stores and I know to myself not to buy Dixie cups because they're owned by the Koch brothers.
Because like, they're owned by the Koch brothers.
You have to like, you know, like I don't think people even realize how much the Kochs are seeped into their life. I'm not even just talking about names on buildings in New York. I'm talking about literally go to your grocery store. They own a major paper towel company. What are they Bounty or Brawny? Which one are they? I can't remember.
I don't even know.
They're one of those. And they're
it's
Dixie
all
cups.
General Georgia Pacific, right? That's them. Yeah,
I think George. I think it
so
is.
There you
George.
Go.
So it's because Koch Industries is either the largest or second largest. I don't know if it's after Cargill or before it, but private company in the world,
right?
And so, they have, and they're also. I mean, every Mike Pompeo's whole career is a Koch project.
Yeah,
congressman from Koch.
Congressman from Koch. All right, let's take a call, folks. Of course, just as always, we're definitely not going to get to all calls because we have to. A little tight time-wise with the travel, but you're calling from 847 area code. Who are you? Where are you calling from?
Hey, it's Josh from Chicago.
Josh from Chicago. What's on your mind?
Must have a Chicago hot dog for me. Hot dog ever while you're in Chicago, please.
Okay.
Devil dogs.
I'll do that.
Do it. Also, first of all, shout out to Jay Inslee. I think I just wanted to give him props. I think his climate change proposals were, like, for me, the gold standard, and I'm glad to see Bernie adopting some of the climate justice stuff.
I think we got a new gold standard, man. I don't know if you read Bernie. Bernie's Green New Deal is the
platinum standard.
Platinum standard. Right. Well, I mean, I'm look, no one's a bigger Bernie supporter. I was shocked at how good that proposal is. You're talking about the indigenous rights protocols. Of the UN in 1992, that no one else is in the game.
There's no one who looks at politics internationally in this country, at least, like Bernie Sanders does.
None.
Right.
None. No one's in the game. Let's be real.
Oh, for sure. Of the candidates, absolutely no one else. I want to talk about quickly, because it mentioned the show, England with Corbyn, because we don't have MSNBC. Centrist here today, so we can talk about real issues, real left-wing issues.
Josh, you're really breaking up a lot, so
make it
real succinct, please, because it's super choppy.
Okay, Lib Dems have been trying to get a voter surge in with, because I believe there is a by-election coming up in one constituency, but for me, I thought it was a brilliant move of Corbyn to offer them basically to form a government in order to avoid a no-deal Brexit.
Excellent. I agree with you, and I will just say, because we're tight on time and the phone line's a little bad, but I don't like to kind of be this crass about it, but I did an in-depth video on that for TMBS, which you can go watch. No, look, he made the move. He exposed the Lib Dems. We didn't cover it here, but I covered it elsewhere. So it's important. You're calling from a 917 area code. Who are you? Where are you calling from?
Hey, Michael. This is Og, also known as Waterboy from Kashmir.
Hey, how are you doing, man?
I'm fine. Anyone who's here, I guess, is fine. Wanted to make a guest recommendation, a little bit of update, and some comments about that. I don't know if you've heard of Rana Ayu. She's the author of Gujarat Files.
Mm-hmm.
I think she would make an excellent guest because she actually like secretly taped people because she's like, no one's going to believe me if I don't tape this.
What's the website? I'll look that up. Could you tell me the website?
Yeah, tell me too.
She wrote a book called Gujarat Files.
Gujarat I'll just call Files. Her name
out. It's Rana, and last name is Ayub. Ayyub. Okay. The book is called Gujarat Files.
Okay, somebody Google taking that down. All right, yeah, I will try to get her. Okay, just we're a little tight. So just what else?
Yeah, no, I completely understand. Obviously arresting people, they're shipping them actually outside Kashmir.
Yep.
Because there have been reports coming out that there are actually people like in Delhi. There's gas shortages, food shortages.
Does that fit with the one interpretation that I've heard that this is in – obviously, this is a nationalist ethnic cleansing project of the BJP, but also that this really is about like that there's a lot of prime real estate there. There's money to be made on ski slopes, vacations, and different property values. And if you strip citizenship and cleanse the place, you can – basically, there's a lot of kind of primitive accumulation opportunities. Is that what's going on too?
Well, there's a big constituency that wants that and got it. And this is what fascists do. Like, they'll tell you what you want. The moneyed interest got what they want. The middle class that is falling into a line and is dreaming of, you know, going up and buying prime real estate there is looking for that. Like, everyone is getting what they want.
Right.
That's what Modi is selling. You know, but like, sort of the way, like, Trump. Like, David Koch may not have liked Trump, but he liked his policies. Or, like, you guys mentioned Mitt Romney. You know, they might hate the guy, but like, hey, he's doing what we want, right?
Right.
Kind of that dynamic going on.
Yep.
And, like, the last comment I would make is the children that they're arresting, they are, it's not just the police, it's not just the military, it's also the paramilitary. So it's not like a local law enforcement thing. It is a way to terrorize the population because what they want is for people to, like, not come out and protest, but specifically push people because any population, you can go in and if you, you know, poke them enough, someone will, resort to violence. And
right.
So they're trying to pick their own opposition, sort of what, like, dictators are like, oh, listen, we're just trying to put down these terrorists. So, yeah, just keep an eye out for that. And, I'll just keep tweeting out articles. But, I know you're short on time. Thank you for your time. And thank you for covering this.
Yeah, please do. Keep tweeting. Yeah. Yeah, tweet me and actually remind me of your handle. I got to make sure to follow you back so I can keep coordinating this stuff. We'll do a lot more on it. Thanks, man.
Okay, man.
It's really disgusting. Leon Grotsky. Hey, Michael, excited to see you tomorrow night. I know this isn't TMBS, but Bolivia needs a shout out for taking initiative to try to mitigate the Amazon disaster. Yes, and I do want to get up to speed with what Bolivia is doing. Apparently, there's an initiative there. Thank you, and look forward to seeing you in Chicago tomorrow night. Great to see and hear Matt Binder, A-Square. One day we have to have the whole band back together. Mike, what a catastrophe in Brazil. Wondering if the people will go on the streets over this and the Amazon. Jamie, good to see you breaking down the song of the Barcua resistance. And pronunciation was perfect. I'm sure mine wasn't. But yes, that does sound fascinating. There's a lot of people protesting in Brazil. There's a lot of movements there, but there's similar dynamics to here in terms of the oligarchs. I mean, it's far worse there. I mean, their movement leaders get murdered, you know. I mean, it's a completely different ballgame. A former president is in jail on fake charges. Goddess woman, Michael, you beautiful bitch. Can I get a shofar? It's my birthday too. Happy birthday, Matt Binder.
Why, thank you, and happy birthday to you too.
I love you guys. MR and TMBS make my life in the end of times more bearable. La Livre, geez. Let's try to make it not the end of times, but I hear you. And here's you shofar. Uh, Glass House. I had some Trump-supporting friends that took issue with Hassan Piker's comments yesterday and tried to get me to apologize for him. It's nothing but a game to them. They have no problem excusing Trump's constant degradation of public discourse, but will act indignant over comments made by a leftist they've never heard of
before. You have solidarity with Hassan.
Solidarity with Hassan, and of course they'll do that. And of course Hassan did not mean that he was happy that the September 11th terrorist attacks happened. He was trying to make a bigger point about U.S. foreign policy. He's trying to make a bigger point, in fact, about literally people like Dan Crenshaw who vote to fund the terrorist-supporting Saudi regime in terms of selling them weapons, even as they're committing a genocide in Yemen.
Yeah.
And he misspoke for 1 second. He deleted the video, and these people are cynical. They're craven. They're lying about him. They're attacking him. It's disgusting. And we have solidarity with Hassan.
And they're just... a bunch of triggered snowflakes.
They are just a bunch of
SJWs.
They're trying to ruin comedy.
Right. And you can't say what you think anymore, and you can't speak with any spontaneity in a live stream anymore.
Also, Dan Crenshaw's crimes go far beyond his voting record, extend to Facebook, if you want to Google that, and then also his smearing of Ilhan Omar. He's a fascist propagandist that just happens to have a Congress seat.
A fun thing, he sucks.
And in this case, while I might not do it personally, I'm sorry, spare me. I don't care. People want to make fun of the guy for whatever reason they want to make fun of the guy. I don't care.
A fun thing about him that he's recently putting together is that you see that thing that's going around online where he's going to do a run across his whole district, which just basically showcases how gerrymandered it is because he's got to go like all over.
You should do it in Crenshaw's. Or did he mean it in Crenshaw's district?
No, that's in Crenshaw's
district.
That's awesome. Yes.
Oh,
Dan Crenshaw is doing it to showcase how he's going to meet everyone across his district, uh-huh. And he showcased what his marathon run was going to be.
Right.
But it just shows you how gerrymandered his district
is. Gerrymandered to hell.
Wait, so Dan Crenshaw's doing the
Yes, Crenshaw's he's actually doing it.
I think Hassan should do the run.
Hassan should totally do the run. Hassan should definitely
Might
do the
dangerous,
run.
Might be dangerous.
Yeah, I was going to say maybe not right now. There's a lot of crazy people right now. You're calling from a 308 area code. Who are you? Where are you calling from?
Hey, it's Kowalski from Nebraska.
Kowalski from Nebraska, the Lula Leave Republican. How you doing, brother? What's on your mind?
Yes. Wanted to call in and just say I'm not in the Warren camp anymore.
Nice.
I think I'm in the Sanders camp.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Shofar for you, my brother.
Damn, this radical.
How did it happen?
That's easy. How did it? What did you say, Brendan?
Said, damn, this radicalizing stuff is easy.
How did it happen, brother? What flipped you?
Well, I don't know. Maybe I've been listening to you guys too much. But personally speaking, my biggest issue will be pretty much environmental.
Right.
Just because, you know, I see that tied to pretty much everything. And I don't know. Warren seems like she's willing to almost start compromising now on some positions. And say what you will about Sanders. Like, I certainly have some disagreements with him, but the guy is, like, as true as they come. Like,
absolutely.
He's as stagnant as Captain America. I mean, he has believed the same thing for 50 fucking years. And, well, sorry about that.
That's
but,
all right.
It's earned.
But, you know, he hasn't changed. And if... I think I called in a few days ago and told you about the whole Amazon rainforest is essential to Californian rainfall because of transpiration and whatnot. But, like, even the Amazon getting developed is, like, a terrible way to raise livestock. And that's, like, in direct contrast to us. And the United States is actually technically one of the better countries to do it just because of the rangeland. But,
right.
But I digress. But just in the long run, he is simply better for workers. I'm a worker. The whole planet consists of mostly workers, and I think it's time to give the oligarchs a run for their money.
Well, I love it. I agree with you completely. And I just, again, you're so right. I mean, look, the fact that Bernie called for freeing Lula is, again, another reason why he's the bravest, clearest, and best. But it's also that you're right. It's interdependent with these other issues. You don't have the systemic understanding of what leads to a crisis like this. And that Green New Deal is so innovative and courageous. It also happens to be scientifically, you know, the bare minimum. Like, we need to do this in a major overhaul.
Well, I've told you guys a little bit about what my plan I'm hoping to be sharing with everybody. And I think a good way to phrase it is just conservation economy. You can get conservation to sell in a red state pretty easily. And I mean, I don't know why people get caught up on semantics, but like this is just simply a no-brainer. I've never supported Trump at all, so like this is a no-brainer.
Really?
Plus, if he's going to bring back the cool co-ops, like the real ones, I'm all for that, because even the old-timers out here will say co-ops back in the day were awesome.
Yep, and he was a pioneer of that in Burlington.
They don't realize that that's a socialist concept, so...
But they were, because they worked for normal people. I mean, he was a pioneer of that in Burlington. That's another great part of his record. Matt, real quick.
Real quick, what was it that made you pick Warren over Sanders to begin with?
There was just some aspect. I thought at the time she may have been like a more reasonable approach, like something people could actually stomach. But I think you just have to be pragmatic about it. If she's willing to, you know, compromise now during a primary when, you know, you shouldn't be compromising at all. But, you know, when push comes to shove, she'd probably break. So say what you will about Sanders. The dude is steadfast.
And that's a good thing. I just want to, like, note, like the thing that's amazing, like, look, yes, you don't want somebody to be stagnant. And by the way, Bernie isn't stagnant. He's already a much better candidate now than he was 3 years ago. But on the other hand, this idea that, and it's this fetishization with academia and quote-unquote smartness. But I've seen people say, like, well, you know, Warren came to these positions through academic research. Bernie just has convictions. Right. That's actually a very desirable trait.
Right.
And I don't know what kind of,
well,
like...
Well, I view it,
you know,
as Bernie, you know, has both convictions and the academic understanding.
Of course he does. Of course,
like, he's
clearly, yes,
a smart guy.
Of course.
It's the idea that you need some sort of data and not just pick the morally correct position on its front is the sort of thing I think is...
The
is
data
what,
and the technocracy is the second order thing. It helps you implement the vision. And I just think that you know, it's very... I've seen that other attempt to reframe, and it's not, and you know, unfortunately, honestly, look at this point, you got to start clarifying the differences, and I will, but a lot of this stuff with Warren is actually, I mean, because it's so predicated on this weird obsessive hatred of Sanders, it's unfair coverage to her as well, because it's always these dumb, ludicrous contrasts that are just trying to smear him and don't, you know, don't benefit anybody in the long term. Thank you a million for the call. I appreciate that. How do you, Matt, you're straight edge.
I am.
Unlike,
but I looked up. I was like, huh?
How do you,
the other Matt makes up for me being straight edge.
How does Matt waterboat himself? You got any guesses?
I honestly, you guys were talking about that. I had to ask you guys what that even meant. I assumed it was a drug thing. Apparently, it's only slightly related to a drug thing.
Well, this is a great transition because you're making about as much sense as David Avella made on Fox and Friends this morning when he talked about...
And Matt didn't just take a hit of something right there.
No, it didn't. He just had some Coke from the can.
Cola.
This is David Avella making a lot of sense this morning on Fox's Out. I can't believe this show still exists.
California has tried to clear out their prisons, and yet every year they continue to have overcrowded prisons. And the focus ought to be on a society that follows the law, not allowing people to defecate in the streets, not allowing individuals to lay on the street, having just shot up with marijuana and having heroin and having a
hold on.
Needle.
So, Matt, now I'm worried. Do you shoot up marijuana?
No, I do brain busters with a bong.
All right, so David should calm the hell down. All right, go ahead. Oh, that's it. All right.
Not allowing people to defecate in the streets, not allowing individuals to lay on the street, having just shot up with marijuana and having heroin. And
I like how they are.
No, heroin, David. David, you awkward idiot.
Come on, even I know.
Yeah, exactly. We understand.
Yeah, I mean,
we're trying to demonize homeless people here. Can you not be an idiot?
If you want to know how far, like, Republicans have gone into, like, this psychosphere, like, this guy thinks that people can shoot up marijuana. That's how removed he is.
Oh, Jesus Christ. That's so pathetic.
Biden clip?
Yeah, we can do one Biden clip. All right.
You don't need to talk about it. You just need to listen to it and just sit back, enjoy it, and that's it.
You just want to literally laugh at a man losing his basic faculties. Okay.
He might have been waterboating, though. He might be waterboating.
Yeah, maybe Biden's getting high. Maybe Biden's blazing. Biden should do that. Biden should come out and just be like, I'm sorry about all the drug stuff, I promise. Weed's actually great. I just discovered it a couple years ago.
It's been helping me with stress on the campaign trail.
I remember the year it was 1982. In 1982, I was in the Senate. I was 15 years old. I was in the Senate. And Bobby Kennedy had just flown back. He was actually at it, Ghostbusters was popular at the time. And Bobby Kennedy was at the movie theater, and then that goddamn Arab killed him. And I sat down with Strom Thurmond, who was my greatest friend in the history of Earth. Great guy. I remember Strom Thurmond said to me, he said, I don't hate black people. I made him pregnant. I said, ah, what a hell of a guy. Anyways, you ladies might not understand that. And I sat down with him, and I said, we got to do something about healing this country. And that year was 1987. All right, here's Joe Biden.
My long friend, time friend, and she's a friend. She's been my friend in and out of public life.
My long friend, time friend. Oh, who's a friend and sad. It's been a friend.
Although, guys, I don't have the...
My long friend, time friend, and she's a friend. She's been my friend in and out of...
It's like he's rapping.
Yeah, you should definitely take... You know, I forget who said this, but it might have been Vic Viana, but somebody's like, if Trump and Biden are both senile, like, Trump will just power through it. Trump's like, yeah, I'm senile. It's fine.
Yeah, it's an just asset.
Just give me some Jello.
You gotta play it like jazz. You can't resist it, Joe.
Problem is, people think too much nowadays.
Joe, just embrace the fleeting impressions that color your imagination.
Herbie Hancock. Okay, guys, what do you think? I don't know if I'm gonna get the Biden voice, but I think the direction that I'm taking it in is pure senility with mixed up time frames that usually lead to defending segregationist senators. I think that is going to be basically the template of the Biden impression.
Right.
I think that makes sense.
The incredible thing to me is
I remember MLK. He was killed in 1990. I just got out of a breakfast meeting with Ronald Reagan, who was my friend. And he shouldn't have joked about Africans not having shoes, but it was a joke. Barack's my friend, okay?
The amazing thing to me is it's gone from people on the left using the term sundowning to describe what's happening with Biden to I've literally seen mainstream journalists start to use the word sundowning to describe what's happening.
Yeah, they've said like he gets worse as the day goes on. Yeah. I mean,
honestly, even like, look, I hope that he is not actually like losing. Like, obviously, I hope that is not happening. But just like, it's clearly just like, yeah, this guy, part of it is like, it would be legitimate if there was any indication whatsoever, and there is literally none, of like saying like, hey, Bernie seems off. Like, it's not ageist to say once you reach a certain point just in terms of your age, we have to ask some basic questions. And if you cover those metrics, like 2-3 years ago, Joe Biden never sounded like this.
Right.
He made gaffes, whatever. But I actually always thought, and I still think, to be honest, even with this, that he's a formidable candidate for a variety of reasons. But like 2016, no problems. He would have crushed it. This seems different. He seems, at the very least, incredibly tired. And, you know, I don't know. We need to be real about that. I like what we were saying, like Simone Sanders is negotiating for AD. What would you say, Brent?
Simone Sanders doing like Cirque du Soleil trying Sanders to cover for Joe.
But the questions in the debate come at the bottom of a Jello cup. That was what Brendan said.
Yeah.
Simone Sanders is like, okay, so all of the candidates are going to have a question, and it's going to be at the bottom of a Jello cup. And he didn't want one Jello cup.
Yeah. These are going to be the first.
He wanted 20 Jello cups to cover all the main issues. So if you're saying that Joe Biden can't debate without Jello cups, that's a real misrepresentation. He wanted a lot of Jello to talk about. The main issue.
Trump versus Biden is going to be the first AM debate series because both these guys.
Sunday brunch debate.
Yeah, like, all right, what did Joe Biden's team demand say 9:30 AM Sunday debate with a break for lunch in the middle of it? That sounds fine. Can I have a fish fillet? Maybe we could both sit on sofas while we do it to get more comfortable.
In the sunroom.
Just these two just old men threatening to slug each other. Well, they like,
what are you talking about? It's already, imagine, we've already heard it. They've literally both already threatened each other with physical violence.
You know, Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, I thought, was the pinnacle election of the decaying like empire. And then if it's Biden and Trump, it's just like, Yeah, I'll say right now, I won't do the dumb, like, self-interested move of, like, telling people to vote Green Party or whatever. But I will tell people, I think we need to start doing a hell of a lot more content on, like, on permaculture, building resilient local communities. Because we're... The mainstream avenues are pretty much done.
Right.
It's just like, you know, I could see some of those senators like, there's this report that Joe Biden only wants to debate if he can have a Jell-O cup. Those Jell-O cups, first of all, they're multiple Jell-O cups. They cover climate change, criminal justice, all of the major issues. So it's a misrepresentation that Joe Biden just wants to eat Jell-O cups with Donald Trump in Sunday morning.
You also got to throw in that this is just also my personal opinion. Joe Biden said he could do it without the Jell-O.
Yeah. As far as I'm concerned, Joe Biden could debate standing vertically for an hour and a half without Jell-O cups. I mean, that's the kind of shape he's in. Oh God! Yeah, you're calling from an 860 area code. Who are you? Where are you calling from?
Anthony, formerly from Connecticut.
Anthony, what's on your? Where are you now?
Florida.
No, nice weather upgrade. What's on your mind?
Yeah. Well, I was calling to address the caller who disparaged Florida, Pinellas County.
All right, gotta be quick.
ERA.
Sorry?
Pinellas County, Florida, just voted to sign on to the ERA.
Cool. Good stuff.
There's still a lot of work to do, though.
Definitely.
So they got to extend the deadline, and then we have to convince the Republican governor. So Google Pinellas County, Florida, ERA. Get involved.
Thanks.
Florida only sucks if you let it.
Oh, I like that. Awesome. I appreciate that, man. Thanks for the call. All right. Final story. Well, let's just do this one. We could play the Trump one, too. It's 19 seconds. But this is the most, I think Felix Biederman said this is the most evangelical thing he's ever seen in his life. Rick Scott went to the wall, Western Wall in Jerusalem, and he prayed for an end to Nicolas Maduro's evil regime and genocide in hashtag Venezuela. There is another group of people who are infinitely more oppressed than anybody in Venezuela who live pretty close to that wall that you could have broken a prayer out for, buddy. I know you don't want to talk about the Palestinians, but at the very least, you don't have to be so tasteless to overhype a crisis across the world. I will say, incidentally, too, Twitter just took down Nicolas Maduro's Twitter account.
They did, right?
Yeah, they just took it down.
Without any explanation, as far as
no explanation, just took down a head of state's Twitter account.
Do Trump next if you're going to be.
Yeah, if we're doing that.
We're doing that. Take down Trump.
Rick Scott's prayers worked.
Yeah, Rick Scott. Rick Scott had the inside.
They went right to Jack Dorsey. Yeah,
there was like a nice rabbi. If you go to the right angle of the wall, you need to go to Jack Dorsey. And Maduro's Twitter will be taken down. I think if you go to the Wailing Wall, you should at least be giving a nice generalized prayer for peace, security, and safety of everybody in the Middle East. But that's just my thought. All right. What's this Donald Trump one? Is this just a fun preview of what we have in store for the next several months?
Yeah. If we talked about Biden, so maybe we want to get into Trump.
All right. Let's do a little bit of Trump. Outstanding mental well-being right here.
Intellectual property theft. Add that to it. And add a lot of other things to it. So somebody had to do it. I am the chosen one.
Whoa!
Somebody had to do it. So I'm taking on China on trade.
Whoa.
And you know what? We're winning. Intellectual.
Intellectual property.
King of Jerusalem, yeah. And chosen one.
Yeah.
It's the look up at the sky. The look,
it's the
back
look
at the
sky.
To it.
A lot that of really people, sells it.
A lot of people thought I was just going to double down on xenophobia for the election, but actually I'm going to go into Messiah complex mode. Weren't expecting that.
Sorry, Debbie.
I mean, we got a powerful guy who thinks he's a god and a literal cult that follows him via QAnon. I wonder what could go wrong there.
Right,
we might see
a
mass drinking of the Kool-Aid coming soon. Who knows?
I mean, if
there are worse outcomes.
Yeah, there's worse outcomes. I was going to say, I think you actually just outlined the most optimistic one possible. No, I like that. I like that. Just them debating. Like, I'm the chosen one. Everybody loves me. You're not chosen one. You're making a... You're the hate of America. You're tearing the fabric. I remember when me and Strom Thurmond talked about restoring the fabric. And he said, yeah, he said MLK should have been a shoeshine boy, but that wasn't the point. I disagreed with him, but we were both in the Senate. Anyways, what were we talking about again? That was my friend there.
I hope he brings back corn pops for 2020.
Totally.
If you're a reporter, ask him about Corn Pop.
Corn Pop couldn't swim in that pool, so I said, you got to go in that pool, Corn Pop. Then I sent all of Corn Pop's extended family to jail when I expended the SWAT team program. That was in 1975. Don't give me the wrap it up finger, Brendan. I'm enjoying myself. Keep your fingers down. You both be quiet. Just earned yourself another call. I told you we're going to be out by 2:15. Show half of this disrespect to Sam. No, but actually, seriously. You're calling from a 305 area code. Who are you? Where are you calling from?
Hello, this is Dax Alvarez from Virginia.
Sorry, tell me again.
Hello?
Yeah, what's your name?
Dax.
Okay, real quick, what's on your mind?
So, have you... I've been reading about reports that, I mean, I'm a huge lefty, right? But Max Blumenthal is one of the guys that I read a lot. Okay. So yeah. I actually have a very intricate background.
But I'm really sorry because we're just super tight. You got to ask the question. Please, what's the question?
Okay, so Max Blumenthal basically went to Nicaragua. Mm-hmm. I've lived in Nicaragua 15 years. And I protested against Ortega because he.
I don't have the. Honestly, I don't have the knowledge base. That's the reason I haven't covered Nicaragua. I need to get much more into it. My instinct is that Ortega has a terrible rights record, and that the United States is trying to destabilize Nicaragua. I think both of those things are true, and I haven't covered it enough because I don't know enough about it. I appreciate the call. I'll look into it more. That actually really is an intention, but I'm just not gonna. I actually try my best, even though it's the nature of our show, to not just sort of speak off the hilt about things I don't know.
Like
about.
We've seen sort of sources in like Brazil, for instance, develop. Like it's hard to like you have to find somebody you can trust, and then you have to
exactly
try to cultivate it.
And yeah, exactly. All right, final call of the day is Michael Brooks from Florida.
Oh, he knew my number. That's really interesting. All right, man. No, I appreciate that. Now, that has me really excited. All right, I know you're quick. So
what?
Now, disparaging Florida was done for one reason. I specifically cannot stand my congresswoman, and I think that's really acceptable.
Who is your congresswoman? Debbie
Wasserman. Wasserman Schultz.
Yeah, I knew that was coming.
DWS.
All right, she's bad. We agree.
Yeah.
Thank you for the call.
But, like, not just bad, like, election stealing bad. Terrible.
Oh, I got it. I'm not... Well, we'll look into that more. This is the Tim Canova zone. All right, folks. I apologize. Cannot get to any more calls because we have to be out of here by 2:15 because of planes, trains, and automobile.
You're going to your TMBS show, right?
TMBS Chicago.
All right.
So let's read a few IMs before we...
While you're looking for those IMs, YouTube.com/MattBinder.
Let me get those plugs in.
Yep, YouTube.com/MattBinder. Subscribe. It's my birthday. Thank you for all the birthday wishes. But for my birthday, you could subscribe to my YouTube channel. Also follow me on Twitter, @MattBinder. And yeah, that's the main things. The podcast is at doomedpod.com. You could also listen to it and watch it at youtube.com/MattBinder. As you can tell, I'm really pushing that YouTube channel.
Teacher Lauren, happy birthday, Matt. Max in Oakland, sounds like there's about to be a crash in the marketplace of ideas. That's great. Okay. Let's see.
These kind of jokes are good in case anyone's not on the same page.
So. Oh, definitely. These are good jokes. Become a member of the Majority Report today, majority.fm/become a member. Of course, we did a freebie Friday, but how becoming a member is the way that this show happens. Become a patron of the Michael Brooks Show, patreon.com/TMBS, Michael Brooks Show on YouTube. Check out and join Literary Hangover with Matt. check out and join the Antifada with Jamie Matt. What's the address for Literary Hangover?
Oh, at Lit Hangover on Twitter.
Okay.
Oh, I've got my Patreon page, patreon.com/Matt Binder. Thank you for the reminder.
And the final I am of the week, Nubian Numid. I'm sorry, I don't know what that is. I apologize. The Algerian revolution is still going strong, which is interesting that France and the U.S. have not made any moves. That's another thing I would like to loop back to. Folks, we have all new shows next week, even though we are on vacation. And we'll be back the first week of September. Peace.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. But finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in. And my pilot light's shining bright. I guess I'm where the choice was made. The option where you don't get paid for the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I guess somehow I lost my drive between the 101 and the 5. Do you know how far the detour takes you? Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in. Shifted it.